Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Welcome to the next episode of Crypto Nights, where the best minds bridge the crypto divide. I'm your host, Kant Miriala. I am really excited today. I have a fantastic guest speaker, but before that, here is a disclaimer. These podcasts are for educational purposes only, not a solicitation, not an endorsement for investment. You do so at your sole discretion. We suggest you do your due diligence. We are not financial advisors. Tokens are highly risky and you could lose all of your invested money. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Wonderful. Welcome to Crypto Nights. We are very excited to have you on the call. And why don't we start off with an introduction, John? Tell us about yourself.
Sure. So my name is John Liotier. I'm the CEO and founder of RightMesh. I've been in technology since the last millennium. So it's been a fairly long time now. But I have a bit of a background in more of the marketing and product side of technology, and have always thought that companies built on good culture and good values could attract good people. So I started the current company, parent company called Left, back in 2010 with my partner, Chris Jensen. And we've been growing ever since. It's started off as a bit of a, I call it a lifestyle business. And then we've been accelerating since 2010. So now we have, I think it's about 120 employees worldwide. So we've been growing like crazy. Every time I turn around, there's somebody new on our team. It's getting a little bit different because I don't recognize people sometimes or all those things, or try to remember certain names. So my background, I've been in tech, I've been in marketing. Really, my core passion is people and looking at how people can disrupt the world, and really how they can make a difference to make a mark in the world.
Wow. So you're one of those unusual ICOs that I look out for. I look for existing businesses that are going out of the blockchain because there's a lot of credibility. You already have experience, product in the market, traction, and all of that. Because many times I just see a white paper and an idea and an ICO. So,
and I've no idea how those people do it. Like we have needed the entire team to bring us to where we are today. Like we had our public pre-allocation yesterday, and that public pre-allocation, we had 15 people online in the middle of the night, basically almost like a gaming atmosphere where we should be sitting there clicking buttons and stopping scammers left, right, and center. We couldn't have done it with less people. So it's, I don't know how these people with these 5-person teams, these 8-person teams, a technical white paper can handle things from a processing transactions in crypto wallet and an identity, let alone building product, let alone marketing a product, let alone hiring people, let alone all these things that run a company takes time and energy to do. So I guess hats off to those that can actually make it pull off of those small teams. I just don't know how they do it.
I don't even know if they do pull off, because there's so many times that the websites are hacked and code is injected and wallets are hacked, except that 9 out of 10 times, I feel even after they are hacked, they don't make it to the media. They're hush hush because it's a bad publicity. Anyway, that's my opinion. But, kudos to you. Tell us about, did you call it the original form of RightMesh was Left, did you say?
Yeah, so the parent company of RightMesh is Left. Formerly known as Left the Dot Media Inc. And we always used to say, we're Left, we do things right. when it came time to name the platform for RightMesh, I'll talk a little bit about what RightMesh is, but it was sort of a natural extension for us of what we wanted to do, how we wanted to do it, and how we needed to name it, because it was, we didn't just want to be any mesh network, we wanted to be the right mesh network. In doing things right for us, it's always about, what is the right methods? What's the right process? What's the right technology? Who are the right people? So in going through this process, it's about trying to do those little things and making sure that they're done properly. And we could have gone fast through this whole process, and we get probably more details about that, but we chose to go slowly and do it right. And so for us to be RightMesh, it's really almost a badge that we wear proudly that, while going through this whole process, we know that we have done the best possible for our community and for the project. And we're not just in this for the short haul. As I said, we've been in business since 2010. We've been working on our mesh technologies for 3.5 years. We feed families, 120 families every 2 weeks, and we have a decade of changing the world. So for us to do it wrong, rather than doing it right, we risk everything, and that's just not worth it.
That's fantastic. Very excited to hear that. Can you tell us about the central idea behind Right Mesh?
Sure. So the idea behind Right Mesh really is about, can you rethink connectivity? And more important than just rethinking connectivity is, can you enable people, predominantly in emerging markets, to have the same rights and privileges of connectivity that those of us in the West here take for granted? Can you give a person the chance to share, connect, interact without using the internet? And the idea of communication without internet, people just don't have a hard time grasping, but it's the, can you find a way to let a university campus connect without using internet, without using data, without using any kind of infrastructure? So what we've built is a platform and protocol that lets people share, connect, and transact without connecting up to internet. Or if one person does have internet connectivity, those on the network can incentivize that person to share their connectivity through our token. You can enable from a third-party sponsorship, so somebody outside the network sponsoring connectivity of those within the network. And with that as a central tenant, we now can let those predominantly, once again, in emerging markets, find a way to communicate without being limited by the narrow spectrum bandwidth restrictions or infrastructure restraints that really is paralyzing these entire economies.
Wow. So over the last 8 years or so, you have actually built out this technology, I imagine. Can you tell us a little bit about the product that you have out there, the traction in terms of users, any revenues, any profits? So I kind of want to go through the backstory and the history before we go towards ICO.
So going back into the far backstory, so back in 2010, as I mentioned, we wanted to do things right. And a company built in good culture and good values would attract good people. And good people can build good things. That's sort of been that foundational tenet as a company that we started with. First few years of the company, we had a lot of stuff in internet and mobile, consumer internet type of companies. Nothing really worked too well. Back in 2013, we had an exit and sale of one of our business units that allowed us to have a bit of breathing room and survival. It was sort of a multi-million dollar sale in the consumer travel, consumer internet space. But where we are now in our mesh technologies really started with our team in Bangladesh. So we have a 70-person team, or I guess an 80-person team now, over in Bangladesh. And it really sort of started because we had our very first technical hire back in 2010 was a guy we met online. It was myself and Chris. And while we've both been in technology, we're not technologists. So we found this one guy. He was great. We gave him a project. Then we gave him a second project. Then we gave him a third project. Then we hired him full time. And we just kept on working together. So we went from one employee to two to four to seven to 15, I said to now 80. But 3.5 years ago, I was having a Skype call with Rakib, and he sent me through this product spec document. And this product spec really outlined this idea that he had to provide connectivity without using the internet. And I said, Rakib, this is kind of cool. Do you think you guys can really build this? I said, no, we already have. Here's an app. And they had built this very rudimentary early prototype of an app that they called Talkify, another one they called Gossip, just sort of two prototype apps. And really, these apps were built by the team on their evenings and weekends just because to prove that they could. I said, this is incredible, guys. This is really amazing what you guys have built. I said, yeah, it's kind of cool. Can we give it to the local university as a bit of a recruiting tool? Do you want to show some of the cool things you get to hack and play and work around on? I said, well, let's just not give it to that one school, but let's give it to all schools. Let's find a way to bring this technology to the world. But that was 3.5 years ago. The technology, as I said, it was rudimentary. We put it into an app called Yo. We launched Yo predominantly into Latin America and Southeast Asia, into countries like Cuba, where the connectivity was really, really small. We had about 1 million installs of that first technology. We never quite got product market fit. It was what we now sort of classify as a single hop mesh network. So one connection to a middle connection to a second connection. That's a single hop, three devices in a single hop mesh. Almost like a hotspot type technology where you can communicate and share, but you also can pass data back and forth between people. But it was an app. And we looked at that and said, okay, well, this is kind of cool, but we don't have product market fit. We need sort of to rethink what this product should be. And more importantly, we needed to re-architect the underlying system because we had a few fundamental flaws. Number one is we had a offline communication platform that required online connectivity, which is kind of defeats the purpose of an offline communication system. In a mesh network, one of the biggest fundamental questions you have is how do you establish trust in a truly decentralized offline environment when you don't have a centralized trust authority in the middle? And one thing that the internet has been great at over the last number of years is establishing trust. And you have these central authorities. It could be the government, but more often it's Google, it's Facebook, it's an ISP that says, yes, you are you, or your device or your IP address is who you say you are. But in a mesh world where you don't have connectivity, is how do you establish that trust? How do you establish that you are who you say you are when you don't have that central trust authority? So a few years ago, I just started to sort of tackle that challenge, and we realized that what we needed to build was bigger than what we had built at that point. The dev team came to me and said, John, we've solved this big trust problem. We now know how to identify somebody in a truly offline environment and truly decentralized environment by using this new thing called Ethereum. Ethereum had just launched, but we can use that Ethereum ID that's generated. And every time we spin up a mesh node for a smartphone or for an IoT device, we can use that Ethereum ID as that unique identifier. So we use the Ethereum ID in lieu of an IP address, and that became our mesh ID. And then we went from there. Unbeknownst to us, Ethereum kind of became something. And we were so sitting there with Ethereum at our very core and positioned very well to do it. So I would like to say it's a whole series of happy accidents that's brought us to this point today.
Amazing, amazing. Well, congratulations. That's very exciting. You know, serendipities, as I say, you know, as we can. So that's wonderful. So now, why the ICO then?
So the ICO really came about, we were going to do it anyways. And we should clarify, it's a token generating event for us. ICO, I think if you are launching your own blockchain or having that, we are an ERC-20 token that is being launched on the Ethereum chain with a port of Raiden to be able to allow payment channels to occur. But when we started to look at what we needed to do, the fundamental issue we needed to solve was that we had this mesh network. And I talked about our early prototype and Yo application. And not getting product market fit. And the biggest thing from product market fit was our users aren't performing the right way. They're not sharing their internet. They're not sharing, they're not keeping their device on and functioning as a routing node in a mesh environment. So if they're not performing the right way, how can we get them to incentivize them to perform things? How can we get to incentivize them to share their internet or share their data? And the logical answer when we asked the question was, well, what if we paid you? And said, well, if you paid us, of course we'd share our internet then. So we realized we needed to find a token that we can actually incentivize them with, especially with micro data, micro transactions, because really it's, I only need to get 50 bytes of data through your system. Can I compensate you for that 50 bytes? So we needed a micropayment mechanism. Lo and behold, we had Ethereum at our very core. And then we said, okay, let's go out and launch a token. Mostly because we needed to find a way to give that end user a sense of what is the value of this token in the network. We weren't looking at it as a fundraising mechanism. The company was profitable from his other half of the business. So we weren't looking at it from a, hey, here's a great way to bootstrap and fund things, because we had millions of revenue that was being funneled into it from other half the company. But here we are. It's, we've been at it for 8 months. We're not doing it as a get rich quick, buy a Lambo thing. It's a, we need to get the community involved and find a way to make sure that there is a value for the token in comparable currency. So how many tokens does 1 rupee buy versus 1 MB of data, as an example? Or how many Brazilian real or Bangladeshi taka, you know, that market comparison, which really having a token offering does allow us to almost sort of set a price that there is a value attached to these tokens.
And I forgot to ask you. So eventually you did not have a product market fit, but then you pivoted. And do you currently have a product market fit then?
So with what we've built with Right Mesh, I'd say no. The honest answer is no. I think it's I think any company that looks at what they have in the blockchain crypto space, I think probably you have two companies in the world that do have product market fit, one being Bitcoin, and their fit is we function as a store of value. Then you have Ethereum, which is we function as a mechanism for other companies to launch. In those instances, they have product market fit. Our core product is not a token. Our core product is a software development kit that engineers and application specialists around the world can go out and build mesh applications on. We launched our mesh software development kit in September of this past year in a closed beta. I think we have about 200 developers around the world now building applications and learning how to use the tool set, and more importantly, giving us feedback on what they want to see within that application environment that lets them do what they want to do. And it's even simple things like, I need to have more than one developer working on one license key. It's simple things like that, which are essential to actually getting the product market fit for our customers, and our customers being the developers themselves.
And do you currently have revenues for your company?
We definitely have revenues for the company from the parent company standpoint. Nothing from Right Mesh as of this point. The revenues from the parent company, it's last year, I think we did about 15, 16 million revenue. This year, we'll probably do about 20 million. So out of our 120 employees, probably about 30 people are working on legacy products, legacy platforms. They're profitable. They've been able to sustain the rest of the company. I think over the last, we looked at some numbers a few months back, and we've put over $7 million of profit from the existing company into Right Mesh at this point. So we've sort of been able to bootstrap off our existing revenues to drive. From a revenue production standpoint with Right Mesh, we are probably looking at a year and a half to 2 years out before we start driving substantial revenue into that business. Right now, it's all about growth of the network and growing density amongst our user base. We're not charging for a software development kit. There's economics within the system, within the platform that will drive revenue from. We will be building applications ourselves. Most of the applications that we create, if not all the applications that we create, we are releasing as open source as well. But there are ways within the system to derive revenue for ourselves or other members of the ecosystem. So we will be profitable by end of year two.
Well, that is good to know. And it's also good to know that you invested so much of your own money from the other companies into this. $7 million is a significant number.
Yeah, my wife thinks I should have just stayed doing that one thing because this has been a year of hell. And she said, you had such a nice thing going there. With you could have just been sitting on the beach and having the revenue just flow in. But I guess this is more important for ourselves and the teammate to actually have that more business with a purpose. It makes no sense to do business just for the sake of doing business. You need to run that business with a purpose.
I'm glad. So the other question I had was, can you deconstruct the token? What are the various utilities for your token?
So the token has a couple different functions within the network. It sort of is the access to the network itself. But if you look at different ways we structure, let me sort of break apart the architecture a little bit. So we are using a port of Raiden. I'm not sure if you know the guys from Raiden or met the Raiden network. Really allows you to set up payment channels. We've taken their U-Raiden or the Micro-Raiden and ported it over to Java to work on their smartphones. But more importantly, it allows us to stake between those payment channel elements. So two nodes who want to share and connect, they can stake their offline transaction. So you and I are functioning and we want to do offline transactions. If we want to sort of pay for goods and services without connecting to the internet, we need to be able to stake, open a payment channel between us to do so. So the token as one functions as a staking mechanism that allows you to stake on that super peer that offline transaction, offline payment capabilities. The primary purpose, though, however, of the token is really as a utility to really incentivize the right behavior. It goes back into why we're called Right Mesh again. That right behavior is, I want to compensate you for the use of your data. I need to give you a fraction of a token or a millitoken or an 18th decimal of a token for one byte of data. So really it's that incentivizing that right behavior. I want you to function as a routing node, being aware that it might have you may have to give up your processing time of your device or your battery time of your device. You need to get compensated for that. I want to compensate you for your attention in watching an advertisement unit. I want to compensate you for distributing an app. I want to compensate you for being a caching storage node for other content to be delivered across the mesh. I want to compensate you for your sensor information that you're giving up, your location information. All those elements are on-device resources and things you have, and we want to encourage and compensate that write behavior with that token itself. So on one side, you have users earning tokens for doing those behaviors. On the other side, you have users who are giving up those tokens for access to services and utility across the network.
That makes a lot of sense. And now, can you tell us about the ICO itself? Can you tell us about, I know what happened. You said yesterday you had the pre-token sale?
We had our public pre-allocation. It was 4 o'clock in the morning here in Vancouver, where I'm located. So we had the entire office filled, and we had some music going in the background. And as soon as the allocation started, 4 o'clock, basically our Telegram channel was filled with scammers, and it was just this massive storm of activity. And we're sitting there playing this video game, like an atmosphere of you know, the game Whack-A-Mole, where you're sitting there whacking all these doing that with these scammers, like free offer, get click here, click here, click here. Music playing in the background. Was Welcome to the Jungle by AC/DC. So basically it was this hard thrashing hard rock metal music going as this, we're playing this as fast as you can game of stopping the scammers. And meanwhile, we're getting notes from Chris, my co-founder, who's with Bitcoin Suisse. We've done everything through Bitcoin Suisse. I'll talk about that in a second. But he's out there in Zug, Switzerland, giving us updates of what actually is happening on the system. And then all of a sudden, a few minutes in, we've closed registration. Like, what? 8 minutes, 4 seconds, we've sold out the pre-allocation. So it was crazy excitement. We had about 300 different contributors who... or more than 300 contributors for this public pre-allocation. We had a very large group of people who were unfortunately dissatisfied because they couldn't get in, but we're oversold, but we'll get them in on the next round. That's sort of coming up in a few weeks from now.
And how much was raised yesterday in terms of Ethereum?
So I should go back and talk about the hard cap of the offer itself.
Oh, yes. The soft caps and the hard caps, yeah.
So for the total project, we have a budget set forth of year one, 10 million, year two, 15 million, year three, 20 million. And the reason I started talking about that first is that we didn't just pick a number of what we thought we could raise from the community. We wanted to actually do budgeting to see what is it going to cost us to deliver what we can. I guess this is one of the nice benefits of being in business for a while is I know what the cost of the developer is. I know what the cost of hiring, of getting the office space, of I know how hard it is to find good talent, and therefore I know how hard it is to scale quickly. We couldn't spend more than that if we had it. So with that budget in place, we really said, okay, if that's what we need to execute the project, let's go to the community and ask for, basically it's 2 years and a bit. So year one, 10 million, year two, 15 million, and then have a little bit of a buffer if we don't actually hit our profitability like we had forecast. So with that, we have a hard cap of 30 million for the total project. We came out in the first week of January with a private round. We quickly raised 18 million in commits. So we raised 18 million in 3 days in early January. Every day since, we probably get requests from between 2 to 5 million coming in of additional money. That's too late for the private round. And we realized that for us, it's extremely important to get the community involved in the project. So even though we could have closed everything privately, it was important for us to get the public involved. So phase one was the private round. Phase two was yesterday with the public pre-allocation. Phase three is in about 3 weeks about the second, third week of March. And we'll basically be finishing off. So we did 18 privately, and the 12 million that we have remaining is being split between phase two and three.
Okay. And this 18 million, how did you have to do marketing to get to that private investors? How did you do that?
Well, we've been on the road for, it seems like forever, really. We started hitting and having conversations with the crypto community and decentralized community last July. We have not done marketing the way that you see a lot of the other ICOs do. I think the way that a lot of the other ICOs are marketing right now are borderline securities violations. I was at an event a few weeks back, maybe sort of second, third week of January, and somebody's up there talking about their project, and they say, on this day, we'll be listed on exchange, and on this day, we'll have a 3x increase in our revenues or in our token value. I says, buddy, you can't say that. You can't talk about exchanges. You can't hint towards exchanges. You can't talk about token appreciation. You can't market to Americans. No. As an example, marketing to Americans includes Facebook advertising. Marketing to Americans includes, hey, come participate in our token event. So we've been very low key in our marketing. It's not that we don't know how to do marketing. We spend over $1 million with Google on AdWords every single month with the other half of the business. So we know that side of the business inside and out. But we chose not to. So in that instance, we are much different. We have almost 7,000 people in our Telegram channel, entirely organic. And these are people who've stumbled across the project, who've heard about us through the grapevine, and they come. And I wouldn't trade our 7,000 for these groups that have 25,000, 30,000 Telegram. It's just a waste of Telegram traffic. There's no good conversations that occur, and that's not us. So we've tried to do a little bit differently. I think the community has really embraced our approach to doing that. We made a decision in part of that, going back and doing it right last summer. We said, okay, well, who do we want to work with in this space? Who's the leader? Who do we trust? Who do we think has done things right that we can emulate? One of the groups we came across was Bitcoin Suisse out of Zug in the crypto valley out in Switzerland. They had been involved with a lot of the big projects before. They had done Bancor and Tezos back last summer. There's some issues with Tezos since then, but the token sale, the way it was done, was done very, very well. We went out to talk to Bitcoin Suisse and said, we like what you guys are doing. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we're about. And we want to do full KYC AML checks on every single contributor, regardless of size, which is a big ask. I think we were one of the very first ones to do it for everybody, not just in the private contributions, but for every contribution coming in, and not having a secondary path. So we've frustrated many members of the community from this very strict, almost medically probing, name your first child and bend over and cough type of examination. But I can guarantee anybody who asks that the checks that we've done have been done right and made sure that we're in full compliance with all regulations, regardless of jurisdiction. So marketing, not so much. Doing things right, absolutely.
Wonderful. And where is your ICO located?
We're RightMesh. It's RightMesh AG. We are a Zug, Switzerland-based company.
Yeah, because you told me you're not raising money from Canada or US. So.
Nope.
Okay.
No, and even though, because we have the parent company left is based in Canada. Could we raise money from Americans and Canadians? I think we probably could, but over an abundance of caution, we chose not to. And it's just one of the things, Switzerland government and FINMA, the regulators over there, have been very clear about how things work, what is a token, what is security, and they've given very clear guidance of things. The Canadian government is great for supporting tech companies, but in regards to this new revolution we're seeing in the crypto space, they've been a little bit slow to act. No fault of their own. They're doing what their mandate is, which I don't fault them for that at all. It's just when you start looking back on things and you say, and they say to us, well, this looks okay, but we're going to reserve judgment and we'll let you know in 4 years if you did anything wrong. Well, I don't want them coming back to us in 4 years from now. So, oh, actually, we looked at things and actually you did do something wrong back there based on the new way of reading the rules. So it just wasn't worth it. We feed families every 2 weeks. And we can't jeopardize the next decade of changing the world by trying to get one more token contributed from a Canadian versus American. So we excluded those audiences from that.
Just so we have it here, can you give us the token sale, token generation event website?
Sure. It's rightmesh.io. That's right as in doing things right, not right as in W-R-I-T-E. It's rightmesh.io.
All right, awesome.
Not any of the scam sites that have been, I think we did four takedowns yesterday of other URLs that are blatant ripoffs of what we're doing. So it's, as I said, I don't know how these small teams can even keep up with all the scammers that are out there.
Amazing. So my final question is, are there questions that I should have asked or points you wish to make that you haven't made on this call yet?
I think the biggest thing is goes back into the why. And the why are we doing this? You sort of talk about the economic side of the why, and but really from a bigger picture, as an organization, we are a certified B Corp. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the whole B Corp movement, but it's about using a business as a force for good. It would be easy to satisfy my wife to make sure that I'm sitting on a beach somewhere collecting revenues from eggs.
So John, I think we covered a lot, but were there questions that I did not ask or points that you wish to make that you haven't had a chance to make on this podcast so far?
Yeah, it's really more about, I need to explain our why. A lot of companies do business for different reasons. And for us, it's pretty clear. We are a certified B Corp. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the B Corp movement, but it's all about using business as a force for good. And in using business as a force for good, we recognize that we have some absolutely unique technology, some amazing technologists, an amazing team that can combine all of their expertise to really do use business as a force for good in the world. And for us, the chance to sort of take our technology and go out and transform and lift up society, we realize we have to do it. Like I think one of the things from a blockchain and decentralized world that we're living in, this revolution that we're all so excited about, it's not about the fact, oh, wow, people can make money. It's about the fact that you can transform societies around the world in ways that never been imaginable before. I was saying to somebody the other day that we're sitting in this world right now where you have these server-shaped robots sitting around the world processing and crunching transactions. And those server-shaped robots are really those first machines that we're putting to work on our behalf. And those are obviously the mining rigs for Bitcoin and other chains. But those server-shaped robots, whether you're in Bangalore or Boston, what you're earning from that mining is exactly the same. And that really, the ability to earn value regardless of wherever you are in the world is transformative. Because normally value is created based on the work output in your local market conditions. But when now you're creating value that is based on a global economy, that changes things. So if you're now able to use a different server-shaped robot, and this time it's happened to be the shape of a phone, and that phone is now doing work for you and earning value, whether you're earning value once again in Bangalore or Boston, it's the same value being created. But when you're talking about, can you allow somebody to create value from their phone and earn that $1 a day, the dollar a day in those emerging markets is massively different than earning a dollar a day in Boston. I'm not saying Bangalore is no longer an emerging market or it's very technology advanced, but places like Bangladesh where we have our team, or we have other markets like that, it's Madagascar, Indonesia, Thailand, Myanmar, really all across Africa and large parts of South America, they're earning $1 a day is transformative. And I think that we're in a world where it's no longer about wealth redistribution, it's about wealth creation. We have a chance to really transform society from the ground up and spread education, do all those things. So that's really what's important about us.
Thank you, John. Thank you for sharing that. That was fantastic. I wish you and your team the very best, and wish you have a fantastic Rightmesh ICO on the conclusion part of it.
So thank you for your time today.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.